We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm up your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, CMOS girlies. Happy March. We have made it to almost the beginning of spring for those who are paying attention to the meteorological weather timing and stuff. I don't know. The guy I'm dating is like a weather nerd, so we talk about weather quite often, actually. It's not like small talk. It's deep intellectual talk. But how's your Monday going, dog?
My Monday is good. Yeah, we finally had the first taste of spring this past Sunday. And it really reminded me how great it is to live in a place where you experience the four seasons, just because I just think that hit of dopamine that you experience on that first warm, sunny day is just like unmatched. And you just, I don't think you could get that if you like lived in LA or Florida or somewhere where it's like consistently 70 degrees year round. But yeah, I'm good. I had a great weekend. My boyfriend and I celebrated our 9 months, which was exciting. That kind of gets me into my first point of just like taking the pressure off of being perfect in relationships. I'm sure a lot of young girls that do listen to the pod are probably slowly experiencing dating. Maybe you like are in your first like serious relationship, or perhaps you're just like just now getting on the apps and experiencing that shit show that is the just, you know, Tinder and Hinge and etc. But I just think like when you are starting out with dating, it's like really easy to think that like you always have to say the perfect thing and always like present yourself in a certain way just to like keep this thing alive, especially if you don't have like great confidence or like you have some sort of attachment issue where you're like afraid to like lose a person just because like you constantly have been like ghosted by guys on dating apps. But I think recently I've just like realized that like, okay, I don't always have to maintain like this like perfect representation of myself and like the person that you're with. If they truly care about you, like they're going to forgive you. And if you have like a safe space and have developed a foundation where, you know, the relationship's rooted in love and respect and trust, that like you can expose yourself and it's okay to make mistakes and you're always going to make mistakes. These are just like learnings that I have kind of realized these past few weeks, as I feel like my relationship with my boyfriend has evolved and as we have been dating longer and longer. So that is just some words of advice and wisdom. I wouldn't really say that I'm like the best at like providing any type of dating advice just because I don't even know how I found myself in the situation that I'm currently in. But maybe that will be helpful for someone out there that listens to the pod.
Yeah, my advice is to delete TikTok and get all the dating advice off your phone. I talk to this frequently with my mom, who obviously like didn't use dating apps in her time and have TikTok and all this shit. But we're truly not meant to get that many opinions and pieces of information constantly about any subject. But I think dating is really hard when you're hearing such conflicting advice that I've really struggled with, like just being present in like relationships and not being like, wait, he said this, or he replied in this many minutes, or like, what does this mean? And then at the end of the day, you're just like two people. And I think I'm, interested to see kind of what happens in like 30 years from now, how people date. Like, I've just been really fascinated with like how technology is going to impact everything. And I feel like there will be some reversion to like no more dating apps or something like that. I think I got a TikTok about how like a lot of dating apps are being sued right now. I don't really know what the lawsuit was about. But I know that there's already a lot of like Gen Alpha that's like rebelling from ever getting on social media and like wants privacy. I think parenting styles are going to change with we see like the next generation of kids kind of like being brats to teachers and like not being able to read. Like all these teachers are coming on TikTok and being like, what the fuck is wrong with the kids? And it is like the millennials that are like, I mean, older millennials, I guess, and like Gen X, I think, that are currently raising like this generation of kids. And so I feel like I was talking to my older sister who's 29, like probably gonna have kids in the future. And like, I think her and I are thinking like, we're gonna be really tough on our kids. Like, we want there to be rules. We want there to be discipline. Like, you can't get like an iPhone until you're like 10 years old, 15 years old. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, that's kind of how my parents raised me. And I feel like that's like been on my mind a lot, just thinking about how technology has like fucked over a lot. If anyone wants to read a good book about algorithms, there's one that I read called Present Shock, and it talks about how like we're always living in the now, and like when you turn on the news, you're kind of put in the middle of a conflict and you don't get like any of the history, and it just kind of changes how we receive information. It's interesting. And then there's another book about technology that I want to read called Filter World. And it's kind of the same concept, just talking about like the future of tech and like how it's changed everything. That's not related to really any of my topics for this week. My first topic is that I'm so sick of having to wash my hair. And I know there's so many girlies that are going to say, probably a lot of CMOS girlies too, like, you shouldn't wash your hair that many times in a week. But like, I'm at a point where I'm running 50 miles throughout the week. My hair in a ponytail after I run is disgustingly sweaty. I cannot dry shampoo that bitch. I cannot take a hair dryer to it and just like let my hair be salty and fucking disgusting. And so hence I shampoo my hair like quite often and I condition my hair quite often. And I've gone down every fucking rabbit hole of figuring out how to do the no poo, how to like do all the messy bun things and like let your hair be sweaty. And like I think for me, the idea of my hair being sweaty would like just bother me throughout the entire day. So if anyone has any tips for what I can fucking do in my predicament, I probably have already tried it, I'm honestly gonna say, but if you have any things that are interesting for me to try on this, wash my hair less journey that I'm on, please let me know because I'm fucking hopeless at this point.
It's also hard because you and I have curly hair, and I just feel like
Yeah.
curly hair immediately turns into a rat's nest. Like if I
Oh
had like
God.
straight hair that was just like paper thin, like you could easily get away with it. I mean, I swim in chlorine every single day, which like cannot be good for anyone's hair. And like I don't shampoo every day, but I definitely condition every day, and like my hair seems to be fine. Like hair health is one area where I'm like,
No
there is
idea.
no hope whatsoever. I just tell myself that like I don't diet. I like have never done any like perms or anything that like requires like crazy chemicals in that regard. So like I'm hoping I'll be safe, but there's only so much you can do. But yeah, I guess curly hair is definitely adds a complexity to that. My last topic is food recommendation. Kate has eaten these before, or I like I remember you posting about them on your Instagram. And it is the Seven Sundays cereal. So like for people who don't know, it's like some sort of like healthy cereal. There's like up it's made with like upcycled oats, etc. But they have this maple sea salt, which I swear to God tastes like pancakes. And I highly recommend getting it. I think it's available at Whole Foods. I eat cereal like every night. That's kind of become my evening treat, post-dinner snack, dessert, if you will. And they're not like too terribly expensive, I feel like, for a healthy cereal, but just like the flavor is immaculate. I've repurchased them. I'm staring at the boxes right now. They also have a chocolate that I bought that I'm excited to try, and like Fruity Pebbles, and like some other fun, quirky flavors. But if you're looking for a fun cereal, definitely purchase.
A good cereal indeed. Yeah, to speak about food for a little bit, everyone got really mad at me for posting about Yasso sea salt caramel bars. If you go to the comment section on that video, there's like 12 different arguments happening. And I, first of all, not paid or sponsored by Big Yasso. That there would have been a paid partnership tag. I would have said ad. We make memes about brands like frequently throughout the week, so I don't know why this one was so alarming. Like we've probably made hundreds of memes about Olipop, and is that giving them free press? Sure, whatever. But I like Olipop, okay? It's not that fucking deep. We are a meme page, right? Second, I wasn't trying to like hype up a big like box retailer either. I didn't think people like really would like take it that seriously because I feel like we talk about so many brands like often. And then there were the other people that were like, how dare they promote this product because this is like a bad product. It has oils in it and like whatever. And then other people were like, oh my God, they're promoting a diet product because yeah, so like it says whatever the calorie count on the box. So I'll be more selective with like which fucking food products I promote. I really didn't think it was that deep. I just like the product. Sorry for all of those that I freaked out during that time. My next point, and to get before we get into this topic, is that the weekends are for being a child. Now, I think this is easier to do in the summer, and like Emma said, in New York, we had like a really beautiful weekend. But what you're supposed to be doing on the weekends is just like getting coffee, maybe working out or something in the morning. I don't know, have your little morning routine, a sense of balance. Then you're gonna like go to a coffee shop or get brunch with a friend, maybe, and then you're gonna stroll around. This is actually very New York City specific. I'm like so sorry that this is the weekend, but you could do this in the burbs. You could drive to a coffee shop, you could go to the thrift store, do random shit, you know, maybe cook a dinner and like make a meal with your friends, get a sleepy girl mocktail, take an edible at night. Like, I love just having a really long kind of like day that builds itself and not really having like a set weekend plan, just having like ideas of like stuff you could do. I've just been really excited to be a kid in the summer and just like city bike like a freak and just like be all about town. I've been, I think with marathon training, I've just been like in so many different parts of the city just from like having to run so many miles a week and then like city biking, whatever, hanging out with different friends. And so I encourage everyone to lean into that inner child work before summer.
Yes, I'm also so excited to bike around the city. That is like well and truly, I think, one of my favorite things to do in New York. And it's just so freeing. You do feel like a child.
We love some childlike wonder. Today's pod is going to be about sexual reproductive health. Now, I'm kind of shocked we haven't really done a podcast about this. I think we've done an episode about birth control like a long time ago called Battle of Birth Control. So if you want to hear about like that, go back. But I feel like hormones are just something that is so common in health and wellness world. There's just been like more interest in like hormonal health and PCOS and birth control and now like anti-abortion laws that are like being passed across the country. So I feel like it was a timely episode for us to do. We answered a lot of your questions in this pod. So I'm going to call Emma back and then we'll get into this week's podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our next partner is a product that Emma and I take every single day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find a greens powder that actually blended together. The taste is hands down the best greens powder I've been able to find. It even has a mild tropical taste, and you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, you name it.
For me, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. I've always known that taking a greens powder is a great addition to one's wellness routine, but I could just never get past the unpleasant taste. This completely changed once I started taking Athletic Greens. It tastes so good that I actually look forward to drinking it every morning, something I never knew was possible. Plus, Athletic Greens contains dairy-free probiotics. And let me tell you, my digestion has never been better.
Another thing that Emma and I love is that it's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hi, CMOS girlies. We are so excited to announce today's podcast sponsor, Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
Are you tired of cooking the same slop? Well, spice it up with the premier variety offered by Green Chef. You can embark on a delicious culinary adventure this year with Green Chef's diverse menu with 80 plus options. Green Chef even has tons of lifestyle preferences like keto, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, you name it.
Supporting your gut health can be challenging, but Green Chef makes it really easy and fun because their meals are nutrient-dense, science-backed, gut and brain health recipes, which are all developed in partnership with registered dietitians that can help improve digestion, reduce bloat, and also boost energy and immunity.
If you girlies are looking to stock up your pantry on different functional snacks and clean beverages, you know, the ones that support your gut and brain health this January, lucky for you, Green Chef has different green bundles, which are a curated selection of unique handpicked goods that support your overall wellness goals. Emma and I love using Green Chef to learn how to cook new dishes, to spice up our pantry with new goodies and snacks, and have much less worry about grocery shopping.
So if you're interested in trying out Green Chef, go to greenchef.com/60CMOS and use code 60CMOS to get 60% off plus 20% off your next 2 months.
Now back to the show. All right, to get into sexual and reproductive health. Now I feel like I'm your middle school like health teacher that was like pulling out all of like the really awkward like home ec videos, like the weird diagrams and shit. Hopefully this is better, but obviously Emma and I are not your doctor. We are not your healthcare practitioner. I feel like you guys know that by now, but I think specifically with this episode about birth control, like we do not know your body and all that things. So all of those things. So we will get into it now. As I did mention in the beginning, we're going to talk about birth control, and we did do a full episode about birth control. So I'm just going to kind of like skim some of like the high points of that. Birth control created in the 21st century, started by Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger has a very problematic racist past, but she was like the person that like created it with Planned Parenthood. And birth control was legalized in the United States in the 1950s. And so it was just after 5 years of like the pill being approved for use as a contraceptive in 1960 that it became legal nationwide in the US. So this is when like the second wave of feminism was happening. This is like the women's liberation movement that was happening. Think of writers like Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, etc. And the main reason that, you know, these feminists were fighting for birth control is because one less important aspect was keeping periods regular. A lot of women were having like really crazy hormonal symptoms, painful periods, heavy periods, not having a period at all. And as you can imagine, women were not getting adequate like health care and attention by healthcare practitioners. And so women were just kind of like lost with like what to do with their bodies. But the main reason that birth control was needed and fought for was to protect unwanted pregnancy. So if you can imagine, if you don't have access to birth control and you end up pregnant, that really impairs a woman's future and ability to plan for her future. It impacts her economic independence. You know, in the 1960s, women could still not have a bank account to their own name. You could not open up a credit card under your own name. So if you imagine that you ended up with an unwanted child, you're kind of fucked economically for the rest of your life. And depending on like who that was with and kind of your relationship status, and if you have a partner and another income to raise a kid with, it was just a reason for women to once again have to stay in the home and not have this independence and not be able to go out in the workforce. And so birth control just revolutionized everything for women and really like kick-started a lot of historical benefits for women. So because of this women's new freedom that women got from birth control being legalized, we can now control fertility, you know, and because of this, maternal and infant health have improved dramatically. We're not getting women that don't want to have kids that might not be taking care of their bodies. The infant death rate has plummeted. Women have also been able to, you know, as I said earlier, fulfill very different educational, political, professional, and social aspirations now that they're not left with something that they don't want. Since 1965, there's been a dramatic decline in unwanted births, and the result of pregnancies that women would neither wanted to be conceived at the time or at any time in the future, right? So I mean, I'm kind of speaking in very, you guys already know my political opinions, very liberal beliefs about birth control. And I think that it's a fundamental human right that women have access to birth control. As I what I mentioned earlier, just like if you're left with an unwanted child and you don't have the financial support, it just leaves women out of so many future opportunities in their life. And since 1965, the number of women in the US labor force has tripled, and women's income now constitutes a growing proportion of the overall family income because women have this control over their fertility. And it took us a now to get into more of like the health and wellness side, it took us a decade for doctors to really know how birth control impacted the female body. So at the time it was passed, there were very few like clinical trials, and we didn't really know how this would affect like different types of women, women at different ages, different pre-existing health conditions, and how they would all like counteract or with other sort of like prescription drugs, or maybe if you're on an antidepressant. So that's to say, in like the year of 2024, we have so much more medical advice than we did at the time when birth control was first legalized. But that's to say, I can imagine if you're a woman in America, you know how scary and archaic a lot of the anti-abortion laws that are being passed, not only by the Supreme Court, by state legislatures of as well, and how scary it is in 2024. And so some of the Supreme Court like overview, I won't get too nitty-gritty into it, though this was like what my beat at one time. Like I went to school for law and politics, so I know these cases very well. The first case that like created a constitutional right for abortion access is called Roe v. Wade. I feel like most people are very familiar with it because there has been a well documented effort for the right wing to overturn Roe v. Wade, and they did overturn Roe v. Wade last summer in 2022 because the Supreme Court has a 6-3 majority. And there's currently a lot of very scary anti-abortion laws that are being passed in conservative state legislatures that are making their way up to the Supreme Court. If you don't live in the U.S. as context, we have executive branch, president, legislative branch that writes laws, Supreme Court interprets laws. And so since we have 50 states that can kind of do their own thing, Texas is passing like really archaic laws against women and like just changing kind of what we interpret as constitutional rights for women's reproductive health. And since Texas is doing these things and it's in complete contrast to all the other states, our federal government, our federal Supreme Court has to review these cases. Since we have a conservative Supreme Court, they might entirely overturn what has been legal precedent for the past 60 years. So it's a really I'm not going to say revolutionary, it's a really scary time to be living in America, because what very few people in a very loud minority of the country, the anti-abortion movement, want is going to impact so many women, and it's going to impact like women of color and low-income women the most. So the case that's currently in the docket to get up to the Supreme Court is in the Fifth Circuit, and it's a case that is pending the outcome to challenge the constitutionality of the pill or birth control in Texas. And the judges are going to be hearing this case and issuing decision by the end of June 2024. So this will be right in the middle of the upcoming presidential race. It's definitely going to be a issue that people vote on for the upcoming presidential election. Obviously, you can imagine where like Biden and Trump are on the issues, but I'm very interested to see, one, what the Supreme Court will do, and then two, what will be like the political response to this at the time. The thing that is being contested right now, you've probably seen it in the news. It is called Miprophistone. Basically, it's a pill. It's like the most common pill. It's about accounts for more than half the US abortions. And the FDA in the United States gave the regulatory approval to pass this drug. They've called it safe and effective since the year 2000s. It's been used over decades by millions of American women, and there's very few like adverse effects. So to question the constitutionality of the pill goes against all the preceding science we have. It's a very ideological driven case. And the anti-abortion movement started in the United States for a few reasons. It kind of was brewing after Roe v. Wade was passed. It started as a reaction to the women's liberation movement. And there's a few reasons why the anti-abortion movement is so strong in the United States. One, there's this idea that it preserves these traditional conservative values, Christian beliefs about when a life begins and when a life ends, and all of that stuff. There's a lot of lobbying efforts to overturn things like Roe v. Wade, and there's a lot of money that's pumped into these anti-abortion groups. If you're interested in any of that, highly recommend you look up the conservative legal movement. That is a deep rabbit hole you could go down about how that has really gotten us to the Supreme Court we have now. But more of what I think I want to talk about in terms of like wellness and health and wellness is that it's very interesting where we are now when we think about abortion. I think a lot about, this relates to women's choice, right? It relates to women's choice to what to do with their body, the autonomy. It's going to be taking us back if this case is overturned and we no longer have the pill in the US. But it also kind of is getting into this anti-science sentiment that I want to bring up throughout the podcast that we kind of saw with COVID. We've seen kind of people talking about like seed oils and the government's poisoning us. I think birth control has this thing in the health and wellness space right now where a lot of people are getting the message from TikTok or influencers or whatever that birth control is adding some sort of crazy thing to your body. And I think there are valid concerns about birth control, which I'll get into in a little bit. It's valid to question what you want to put in your body and like if you want to go an entirely holistic route and not have hormones in your body. But then I think when people make that argument, like it almost feeds the conservative movement that want to overturn, birth control as is for different reasons. And I think birth control, just to say, like, everyone should have access to birth control, whether or not I want to take it or you want to take it. There are other people who do need it based on their like reproductive and sexual health situations. And so I think it's just a disservice when I feel like the water's kind of gotten muddied on birth control in like the health and wellness space, like people who tend to do more like holistic interventions and whatever. And also, to be frank, like I am not on birth control. And that is not really for any reason tied to like it being toxic or unsafe or whatever. Like birth control is very safe. For me, it was more like background of having amenorrhea. My doctor at the time was like, your hormones are really fucked from having an eating disorder. I don't want to put you on birth control because it would give you fake hormones with estrogen if we did give you like a hormonal thing that had estrogen in it. And then we wouldn't know if you are getting the cycle back because your weight restored from your eating disorder or if it's because birth control induced a cycle in you. So anyways, the different types of birth controls that you could get, barrier methods, condoms, there's going to be short acting methods. This is going to be probably the pill, the vaginal ring. These things do use estrogen. The combination pill, the patch, and the vaginal ring use them. These are short acting methods because you have to remember to use them either like daily, weekly, or monthly. And yes, these things work. If the pill is used as directed, only 1 out of 3 women will become pregnant in the first year of use of birth control. So that was a test like back in 1960. And all you have to do is really stick to this daily pill schedule and make sure you start your packs on time. I mean, if you forget or miss taking pills, like that can create a problem. There's so many different birth control apps that you can like download if you are on the pill and like forgetting to take it or whatever. You also can use condoms in addition to birth control if you do want to get that extra pr protection and peace of mind and also help protect against STDs. The long-acting hormonal methods for birth control include the copper IUD, which is very popular, the hormonal IUD, and then an implant. These are long-acting methods. They last for 3 to 10 years after insertion, depending on the device. So the real thing with this is like you have to kind of know where you are in your like sexual and reproductive health journey. Like, do you want to have kids in 3 years? Then you probably should not get the copper IUD. Do you want to have kids in 5 years? Maybe you should get it for 3 years, get off of the hormonal IUD so then you can get your cycle back to normal because that is a thing. Like there is a waiting, not a waiting period, but there is a period where your body does have to adjust. Like once you go off birth control, if you do want to get pregnant. And the copper IUD has no hormones. And so I think a lot of people that tend to be like, I don't want to have fake hormones. Maybe I've had hormonal issues in the past. The copper IUD is like a really good option for you. And then there's also a very holistic, natural way to conceive children. Like there's different fertility awareness methods. This would be you'd have to measure your basal temperature. You'd have to know which days of the month that you're able to get fertile. And you'd also have to collect like mucus and like keep track of that. And then you would not have sex around days that you could like conceive a child or like the days that you're fertile. And there also is obviously emergency contraception, plan B, morning after pill, which can prevent unwanted pregnancy. And all of these things are going to work. The thing is that like contraceptives, like I said, the IUDs, those things have lower pregnancy rates just because there's like little effort on your part. It's like inserted in your arm or whatever, and you just like chill. And then when you have to monitor it with the pill like weekly, or let's say you're doing like the fertility awareness method, like you have to be really monitoring your cycle. And if you don't have like the time, space, energy to do that, that might not be the best choice for you. But all I was trying to say with that part about like birth control and like the anti-science stuff is that I think it's really important to say that birth control is effective, it is safe. That doesn't mean you have to get on it. And it is very individual of like if you want to get on this one versus that one, or if you want to try doing natural cycles, it's all going to depend on like your relationship status, how often you're having sex, pre-existing health background.
Yeah, and just like how there's been so much talk about birth control being like toxic on like social media and like women talking about how they're getting off it because they don't want to be on it for fertility reasons. There's also been this other myth going around on social media about like men and women losing their libidos over like stressors of modern life. And I think the hypothesis there's maybe some validity or some reason to question. And it's typically like the Dave Asprey of the world and like other like crazy science bros on the internet that kind of talk about it all because of like, you know, everything's made with plastic, or like we store everything in plastic, and like all of our foods are like sprayed with these crazy chemicals, and people just like believe that this is then impacting our hormones and thus leading to like people having like low sex drives and like low testosterone levels and other like levels such as estrogen. And there is some validity to this, and it is true that people are having less sex, particularly Gen Z and millennials. And there's a few articles, and there was one from the LA Times, and they kind of talked about that technology and intense like academic rigor and just the pressures of college, and then also this like slower motion process of growing up, which I'll get into in a second, are a few of the growing or some of the root reasons why researchers have concluded as to why younger people are having less sex. And of course, too, I think like COVID only exacerbated this just because of the fear of transmission from COVID-19. So this really contributed to the shift. But then also too, like more from like a zeitgeist and like cultural shift, like we're now more online than ever because of the pandemic. And that has really like limited our social interactions with people IRL in the real world just because we're now all online. And this trend for having less sex is not anything new. Like UCLA and UChicago and other universities across the nation have been conducting surveys and analyzing these social trends related to sex and relationships among younger generations. And so this trend is pretty consistent nationally. It's not like there's like one particular pocket where people are having less sex than others. And again, it's just because there's been this whole cultural shift that like everyone has been impacted by. But you would think that like, oh, okay, we have dating apps such as like Tinder and Hinge, you know, like we are all like the whole hookup culture. Like you would assume younger people would be having more sex than ever, but actually that's kind of wrong. And it's really tied to this reason that like we aren't growing up as fast as previous generations. Like if you think about like our parents' generation or like baby boomers, like they were like meeting their significant other at like 18, 19, like getting married at like 20 and like having kids right then and there. And these major milestones are getting pushed back further and further. And this, of course, is due to like the cost of living, how long it takes to like complete education, especially if you want to do higher level of education, and also just like how long it takes for anyone to get promoted in this goddamn country. And just like also too, I think just this access of further information and women like being like, no, I want to prioritize my career and professional life before I start having kids. So naturally, like relationship development is going to fall on the back burner due to these other priorities or these other reasons that kind of are forcing people to get married and have kids later. And, you know, we are living predominantly online. Like I said, our generation, Gen Z specifically, is drinking less with the whole like sober curiosity. Like people are realizing, like, oh, I don't want to be drunk all the time. Like I know what the health effects are again, because we have so much more access to information that like we're not going to clubs and like not meeting up with people and like probably not going home with like random strangers for the bar. And I think also too, like the Me Too movement had a huge impact on that of like men not approaching girls and like girls maybe being more fearful or more like on high alert from, you know, just like strangers coming up to them. And obviously like this is like totally different compared to like older generations where like you were almost like forced to go to like the local neighborhood bar if you wanted to meet anyone again because they just did not have technology at their fingertips. And you know, I think when we were reading articles and hearing stuff about like are we having like low libidos and like is it bad that younger generations are having less sex? I think it's like too soon for us to really tell. And I think it might be healthy actually that there is this shift or this like narrative of how much sex we are having. Like women are gaining more autonomy over their bodies and like young people are investing in themselves and like their own personal aspirations. And I think like we're told at a very early age that like the more sex you have, the better your relationship's gonna be. And like, yes, there's probably some science to back that up, but like sex shouldn't be like the only priority in your life. And it's also like totally normal to like have a low libido and like, you know, you're not always like needing to be like hungry for sex and like constantly wanting to do it with your partner. And I think it's like realizing that, like, okay, it is like totally normal. So I think it's like, again, like I said, too soon to really tell if like this low sex drive that like younger generations are having or just like less sex in general is like a bad thing. That'll definitely be something to come. And I think similarly to what Kate mentioned in the intro section, just like how technology will further impact this part of our life, I think is like something that's very interesting and something that, you know, again, we won't find out for a while.
Yeah, I agree. And I think another aspect with like the economy just being so fucked and everything being so expensive is unfortunately a lot of people don't want to have kids because they can't afford it. The cost to like get a kid from like K to 18, I think like median is like over $100,000 easy. And like that is a really tough financial pill to swallow. And I think a lot of us realized or maybe have had situations where I think a lot of people who had a childhood where maybe you didn't have certain things or your parents weren't able to do certain things, like that totally changes how you want to conceive kids in the future. If you do, climate change is something I think about. And do I want to bring kids into this like fucked up planet? Like, depending on what happens in the next 10 years or so. So I think that's another underlying factor, as it relates to sex and like people's visions of like families and stuff. As I said in the intro, like Emma said, I'm curious to see how dating apps, like if they dwindle in the upcoming years, if people will have to be going out of their homes to meet people. It'll be interesting to see kind of like what happens in the next generation. To talk about like birth control and wellness a little more, kind of like more of like the sociological side and psychological side of what's going on. I think we're at a point where health and wellness, we have so much more access to information and specifically more access to information on women's health than we ever did, right? I've read so many books on women's health if you want any recommendations, but I was reading one that was talking about how and really emphasizing how a lot of things that we have benefited from Gen Z women today were things that our mothers fought for, not our grandmothers. Birth control, a very recent win. 1972 was the first year that women could sign up to run a marathon, right? Opening up a bank account, getting a credit card wasn't until the 80s. Title IX, women weren't allowed to play college sports until the 80s. These are very recent wins. And so I think we're starting to see the pushback to that by conservative men and people that don't want women to succeed in society. And so now that we have more information on like women's cycles than, let's say, 60 years ago, I think so many more women are curious about what's going into their body, what's happening to their body, how does food affect our body, how does endocrine disruptors, affect our body. Like, we're able to track like what stage of our menstrual cycle on we're in. You can go on TikTok and see different foods you should eat during different parts of your period, cycle syncing. Like there's very advanced hormonal testing you can get with lab panels. I was talking to my mom about this, who was a professional athlete, and like thinking about how the next generation of female athletes will be with such access to how our bodies work. And we are still so far behind. I think that my favorite book of 2023 was called Up for Speed or Up to Speed, and it was about the lack of science we have on female athletes. And it just really made me angry and frustrated to think like we live in this world where we have so many benefits. Like I can have a little meme page and shit post the podcast with Emma here and have so many rights that I have inherited from the previous generation, but at the same time there's still so much fucking work to do, and we're still not even close when it comes to like women's healthcare and women's equal access to like healthcare and information about their bodies. I think some people and a lot of women are now having this desire for more information about their body. Like, I want more clinical trials on how this impacts my body. For example, tampons at first were tested on water, not using blood. And like, that was the efficacy standard. And so, if you can imagine, like, how the first tampons like worked, yeah, they didn't really work for jack shit because we weren't even testing them on blood, which was the thing that was going to be like using, with tampons. So I think it's very important for women to be curious about their bodies and to question information about stuff and think about the hormonal risks and like endocrine disruptors and whatever. But I do think that there is also an anti-government, anti-conservative or conservative pushback to birth control that's very similar to anti-science sentiments we've seen about the vaccine, that we've seen about different drugs and big pharma's ruining stuff. Like, it's tough because it's such blurred lines where there's some things to be critical and really analyze and think about, like, why is this happening? But I think we're in an era with social media where conspiracy is pretty close. Like, it's very easy to be a little bit skeptical, and then you get down some rabbit hole on the internet and you get into a full-blown conspiracy about something. So I think there are valid concerns about birth control and kind of like that whole space, like women's healthcare space, right? Like, when we think about Black and brown bodies and how they've been treated and discriminated against by the healthcare system. Totally valid to think about that. The Black maternal mortality rate is so extremely high in a developed nation like the United States, right? There's another concern about birth control is that the estrogen containing birth control is like if it has the risk of giving people too much estrogen and like what that can happen to the body. And there was this concern that a lot of women had in the early 2010s, like, could this increase the risk of breast cancer? And so there was a study published in 2010 that followed over 100,000 women. And, it showed that there was a very slight increase for the women on certain types of pills, but later the study looked at women on different formulations of birth control after like more better well-developed pills were developed for women, and it found that there was no r rise in risk for breast cancer with any of these forms of birth control. And if you are in birth control, it does lower your chance of getting things like uterine and ovarian cancer. So as I said in the beginning, like just because you don't need birth control doesn't necessarily mean that other women don't need the pill. Just because you don't want to put it in your body for whatever reasons, I think you should talk to your doctor. I mean, if you want to talk to an Eastern medicine practitioner, like that is fine too. But this is all going to depend on your sex life, your number of partners, your relationship status, future plans. Do I want to have kids? Your age also is dependent on like different types of birth control and what it can do to your body, your hormones, and your health background. Like if you have a background of amenorrhea, it's going to be very different if you're someone who's had very painful, heavy periods. And so I think the biggest advice I have in like women's healthcare space is that unfortunately, as it is with our system, like you have to advocate for yourself, which I think is not new news to any of the young women listening to this podcast. It's tough when you feel like there should be more advances, more answers, more research, but I think you have to keep asking and asking your doctor, healthcare practitioner for answers. And hopefully you can find one, but yeah, it's just such a disservice that it feels like we've made such progress that birth control is accessible, but wait, now it's getting rolled back by the Supreme Court. Also, I go to my doctor and I say I have this problem and they have no idea what I'm talking about, right? So I hope that we can see in the next coming years that there's a wave to get better access to healthcare for women.
And then we're going to round out this episode kind of talking about things that you can do to best support your fertility or reproductive health beyond debating if you want to be on birth control or not. And granted, like some of this stuff may seem like hippie woo-woo, but like so much of our health is so intertwined with like what we do in terms of like the food we eat and our lifestyle factors. And I think like anything that gives you some sense of idea of A, your reproductive health and like your periods and like your menstrual cycle, I think that just like gives you so much more empowerment. I think just like having any type of understanding and like realization of what's going on can be so beneficial. So we're going to start off with seed cycling. This is something that we've talked about. We make a meme about probably like once every week. And a lot of girlies were still asking us questions about it. So I'm going to keep this brief just because it is like fairly straightforward. And we've done like a few other episodes touching on this, but essentially seed cycling is eating a variety of nuts and seeds in conjunction with our two parts of our cycle. So we have our follicular phase and our luteal phase. And so we're going to start off with the follicular phase, which is days 1 through 14. And essentially here you're eating a tablespoon of fresh ground flaxseed and pumpkin seeds. These are all seeds that are fairly easy to find, I would say, nowadays across like major grocery stores, or like if you go to the local co-op or any sort of bulk food section, you'll easily be able to find these. And you eat a 1 tablespoon of these from days 1 to 14. And basically the whole idea here is that eating these two together will inhibit the production of excess estrogen and improve progesterone levels. And then on day 15, which is typically around your luteal phase, and of course like everyone's cycle is going to be slightly different. So, you know, one thing to say here is that like the seed cycling method is typically, you know, push for like a 28-day cycle, but again, like that is not very common for a lot of people. Like a lot of women are going to have like a 20-day cycle. Some people might have longer cycles. So again, it's kind of like figuring out where in that switch does typically occur, and you can kind of figure that out. You know, if you're not on birth control based off of your body temperature and other like your cervical mucus. But anyway, for the luteal phase, you're eating 1 tablespoon of sunflower and 1 tablespoon of sesame until the end of your cycle, and then you switch back to the flaxseed and pumpkin. And essentially here, sesame blocks excess estrogen, and sunflower seeds support the liver in the detoxification process. And of course, there's like no strong scientific evidence for seed cycling, but you know, food can definitely be medicine. It should not, you know, fully replace medicine. And, you know, not everyone's going to respond the same. I've had positive experiences with seed cycling, and like other people have too. And like, you know, some people maybe have not felt anything. But I will say again, with like anything related to health and wellness, if it's a supplement, like you have to be fairly consistent with it. And, you know, if it is making you feel better and encourages you to be mindful of your cycle, then I think like that's enough of a reason to continue A with seed cycling or any type of, you know, ritual or practice that does support your fertility or mental health or whatever aspect of your health as it is. And, you know, we are typically told to believe that like only prescriptions can save us. And, you know, there's really no incentive to ever really do large studies on like Eastern or ancient practices. But seed cycling has been around for hundreds of years. And so there is some validity in, you know, just so many cultures. And, you know, like all these nuts and seeds have so many like healthy fats and like omega-3s, and we know how beneficial eating fat is for women in terms of like maintaining a healthy period. Some other ways to support your fertility, again, kind of related to food and lifestyle, eating antioxidants, so like folate and zinc, these will help remove free radicals. There's some research showing that like excessively high levels of radicals can damage sperm and eggs. Fruits and veggies, polyphenol-rich foods all contain the most antioxidants, so definitely incorporate these into your weekly grocery list. And then eating a large breakfast for protein. I think I'm really happy that we're finally talking about eating breakfast and straying away from like fasting or intermittent fasting or like delaying our breakfast. This is especially beneficial for a woman's fertility or anyone who has PCOS. And this really is just because it's going to take your body out of a stressed state. Cortisol is highest in the morning. And so if we aren't feeding the body, we'll kind of remain in this high cortisol state, which is not safe for women when it comes to reproduction. And having no appetite in the morning can be a sign that you're running on too much cortisol. So if you're someone who never has an appetite, like maybe just start small with a banana and then slowly over time, your hunger cues will kind of alter and you'll start to actually feel some sense of like hunger in the mornings. And also too, the reason to eat a larger breakfast with protein is just to help lower insulin levels. Again, like limiting refined carbs, it shouldn't be a surprise here. This will just help reduce blood sugar spikes. And again, a consistent high level of insulin can reduce reproductive hormone production. Fiber, this will help remove excess estrogen. And then just overall reducing stress, just because we, again, do not want high amounts of cortisol running in our body. I did want to spend like a decent amount of time talking about exercise and fertility, because I think anyone who does exercise is a female athlete, like you probably have experienced losing your period. And this is definitely an area that a lot of young women typically experience. And it can be like really frightening, especially when you're in your 20s and you have had healthy periods since, whenever it was that you started puberty and you're finally, and you wake up one day and you miss your period and you know you're not pregnant. It's kind of like, oh shit, what's going on? Regular fitness activity can, yes, for sure, help balance hormones, improve insulin, and reduce stress, all of which can help boost fertility. So I'm not saying like you should not exercise, but I think with anything in life, it's like moderation is key here. But too much can damage a woman's fertility. Our reproductive system is highly sensitive to an energy deficit, and the body weight and body fat composition directly impacts female fertility. So the minimum percentage of body fat that is required for that first cycle to ever occur in a young woman is going to be around 17%. And then from that point onwards, around 22% is required maintenance for ovulation. Again, this is like an average, so some people might be able to maintain a period on slightly lower body fat, but like in general, for the general population, 22% is like a safe place to be. And women naturally just need more fat than men. So, yes, it can be frustrating, but it is there for like a survival mechanism and just from an evolution standpoint. And the stress of exercise is not necessarily why we would lose our period, but it's more this energy deficiency that we experience in our body's attempt to conserve energy. It's really like altering our reproductive hormones. And the hormones that are responsible for ovulation and estradiol are suppressed when we are in this significant deficit, and it causes ovulatory dysfunction. Again, leptin levels are also suppressed here, which is a hormone that interferes with our appetite. But I think the really exciting and encouraging news here is that exercise does not cause permanent damage on our fertility. So once an energy balance, an energy balance is the main factor here. So once it's restored to a healthy state, our cycle will come back and you will be fertile again, which is, I think, really promising for any young woman who has experienced amenorrhea, especially for me. Like, I was always worried when I wasn't getting my period, like, oh, holy shit, does this mean like I'm not going to be able to have kids in the future? Because that's something that I definitely want for myself personally. And that was like always frightening. And so I think knowing that like our bodies are so smart and they can heal ourselves. And so knowing that like if you are in this place where maybe you're not feeding yourself enough, or maybe you're overexercising, or like maybe knowing you like want to do a marathon or ultra marathon, like you know that that's probably going to result with you potentially losing your period just by how much you're exercising. Knowing that like after that event, you can go back to like a normal state and be fertile again, I think like can help take a lot of the stress off a woman. And, in terms of like comparing this to men, there's little evidence that intense exercise impacts male fertility. Intense exercise can decrease sperm concentration, and similar to women, men can also lose their sex drive if their body fat is too low. This is something that's talked about from a lot of like bodybuilders that, do all those competitions. That is like one con that a lot of guys typically talk about. And but also too, on the other hand, being overweight can also impact the quality and quantity of sperm. So like I said, with all things in life, like moderation is key. And definitely play around with figuring out what's best for your fertility health. I definitely recommend like building a good relationship with your OBGYN because they're going to have so much more knowledge and suggestions in terms of like what you should be doing at your current age in terms of fertility. And of course, like everyone's like needs are going to change, especially as we get older and as kids become more and more prominent in the future, if that's something that you want to, pursue.
Sorry, did not realize I was on mute. Yeah, I think there's so much buzz on the internet, like once again, about everything. But when it comes to hormones and different supplements that you can get to like get the perfect cycle and fix your hormones in 21 days, like it will be long-lasting changes and it's going to take a lot of time to figure out stuff. Like I have a few friends with PCOS and it's like unfortunately a very long journey to figure that out. But I think with all that being said, we do have more access to information. Hopefully you can find like communities on the internet, like CMOS girlies, you can find Reddit rabbit holes, etc., and like find information that can like lead you to the right place. But as we say in all things, like kind of treat your body like an experiment and just stay curious and keep reading up about all health and wellness things.
Yes. And if you have any other type of like, I don't know, routine or supplement that you like to take, definitely in the Geneva chat because I know so many girls like to take stuff for PMS and like other symptoms. But I hope this ed or this education, I hope this episode was educational and very insightful. I know I personally learned a lot, and it's just exciting that we are at a place where there is so much more information available for young women. And it's unfortunate that it's taken this long, but I definitely hope that this has helped someone.
Yeah, hopefully it's helped the girlies out there. That's the pod for this week. Hope you girlies stay strapped on the meme page. We post every single day, podcast every Tuesday, but we will talk to you girlies next week.